All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Tech Watch Radio, where we keep an eye on tech so you don't have to. Brought to you by Network Providers Incorporated, networkprovidersinc.com for the main website. You can learn all the different incredible tools we have and experts we have in the field to help you with all your IT needs, ladies and gentlemen. The radio program, npitechguys.com, is available via so many distribution methods. It's not even funny. Check it out, npitechguys.com. I'm with Jay Harrison. Welcome, sir.
AIJ is on the way. Right now, you just had the real deal, but soon you'll have an AIJ that you can just, you know,
just include here. AIJ, and Jay can just kick back in the recliner and watch himself on.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do a TV shows instead. It'll be better to watch the AIJ.
Well, I guarantee the AI will be better to watch than the real thing.
Wow, there's so much going on, it's hard to even comprehend. Security, as I've worked on with Newman for the last couple of weeks, and we'll be having an insurance guy on about cyber insurance soon. It's kind of been a little bit of flexible juggling around people's schedules to get this expert on with us. We'll be doing that hopefully next week or next episode, next couple episodes, I guess I should say. Anyway, that's happening. But there's also the FBI in the news. And I guess they're taking down the bad guys, Jay?
Yeah, well, the FBI recently had a takedown with the Lockerbit ransomware. This was affecting Fulton County, Georgia. And it's interesting, they have been at this for a while. And they claimed that they had a whole bunch of documents that they were going to release about the criminal prosecution of former President Trump. And watchers say that teaser documents have been published. And it's kind of interesting that the gang is saying that they still have this data and they're trying to regroup and still republish this. The problem is that a lot of some people are like, hey, well, you know, let's do it. Let's see it or whatever. But another issue is that this could potentially put to risk other prosecution, crimes, witnesses, things like that. It could jeopardize a number of other criminal trials. So it's interesting that you have this two-way fight. The FBI is trying to shut these guys down. These guys are trying to resurface. It's just it's interesting to say the least.
The other interesting thing about this, in my opinion, is this. They say they were going to release sensitive information on government computers is really the bottom line, and that's why the government's right. So interested in this. I don't know, Jay, if this is any different than anything else. We almost want to isolate this and act like this is somehow different. Anybody in a ransomware scenario is in the same boat. Let's be clear.
You're 100% right.
This isn't just something unique for government per se. Now, government's taken up in arms and want to crack down harder on this one because they're the ones getting the attacks.
I don't think that's fair.
When agreed, but that's what's happening, right? If I got the attacks, the government wouldn't be working on it like they're working on this baby.
No, and I think the reason why it's making headlines, though, is because it's, you know, it's got Trump involved, it's got criminal cases, got Fulton County, Georgia, which has been in the news, and so, you know, if it's just, you know, SBI tech guys or something like that, that's, you know, victim of ransomware, may not make headlines like anything Trump-related right now does.
That's truth, but to me, you take the tech nugget out of this and say, look, the fact is, folks, the Lockbit ransomware stuff is attacking, you know, the government right now. If they can really attack the government this successfully, Jay, they can attack any one of us. And so what you want to make sure is that you're not the low-hanging fruit. You want to make sure that you get the right tech team to work on your stuff to make sure, you know what, you've got a lot of the details taken care of to where you're not the one that's going to be in harm's way next. And really, that risk-reward analysis is all about that discussion.
Very much so.
Where this will go, we'll have to keep an eye on the ball for this, but they've shut them down. Well, do you think they'll just resurface? I don't see how you can keep them down very long unless you start making arrests, right?
Well, I think you will. For one, I don't think a lot of these guys, the major hacker rings, I don't think they're located stateside anyway. So there's not a ton the FBI can do about it. You know, they could try to work with Russia, China, India, these other places where they are. But, you know, they can shut down their servers. And certainly some of the stuff, maybe some of the hardware, maybe even commandeered stuff is here stateside and they can try to shut that down. But these guys will just, they're kind of like roaches. They're just going to regroup and come back. You know, they're resilient, to say the least.
It's certainly the war of machines, that's for sure. And I guess this is brought to us by Crimson Security, right?
Yeah, this is Krebs on Security.
Krebs on Security. All right.
That's the guy that broke the story. Absolutely.
All right. There you have it. SpaceX in the news in kind of interesting information, too, by the way. They will, quote, deorbit nearly 100 Starlink satellites with an unidentified flaw. TechCrunch with this piece. And they say that they're going to be sending 100-plus Starlink satellites to, quote, retirement is the idea. They say that there's some uncertainty about how they can kind of decommission themselves, Jay. That's the problem. There's not flaws like security flaws in this case. It's more they can't decommission themselves in a safe, good way. And so they don't want to be the guys blamed when there's a gazillion space debris satellites out there and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. So Elon Musk is literally doing this on purpose and taking the early gen satellites down so that they can avoid this problem. And what they're saying is, don't expect kind of a fire show or whatever, because they're just going to bring them down one or two or at a time. They're tiny and they're not really that big a deal. If they take this down appropriately, they're gaining experience, by the way, of how to take space debris out of the sky. So this is not a waste of time by any means. And it doesn't mean that your sat service from Starlink or anything else is going to be going down. They say they got enough satellites up where you'll never even notice it. But the announcement explains that I guess there's a probability of failure by these satellites is the big concern. And so they're saying before they fail and we have all this space junk out there, we're going to take proactive action to stop it. We're asking the company for more details, they say over at TechCrunch. And they say they'll just be, you know, tons of debris if they don't learn how to somehow, you know, decommission these things. We need satellites working perfectly. And the issue is if they lose control of it, then it's just debris. The real issue is control here, Jay.
Yeah, and it's a smart move on them to go ahead and deorbit them early. What you want to do is you want to take them out of orbit and have them just burn up in the atmosphere. You don't want them to go too shallow and they'll, you know, come through somebody's roof. You don't want them to just malfunction and stop and stay in orbit for hundreds of years, just causing more space debris and more garbage up there that you got to avoid. So the safe thing to do is take them out of orbit, let them burn up, and just take care of the thing. And I think that's smart on their part. Even though they may be able to get more life out of these, they're saying proactively, we don't want them to go south where we lose control of it. And then it just becomes one more piece of space junk or space junk that we have to track and make sure that everything else is clear of it. So it's smart. And I think it's pretty cool.
I agree 100%. And they say the descents will be triggered over the coming weeks and months. But these satellites aren't capable of big moves, so expect as they kind of, you know, tweak them, it'll be more than a downward direction. They're taking responsibility if it collides with anything else along the way or whatever else as they decommission these intelligently. They say they will fall one by one, not in a group, so don't bother watching the skies for them. You'll never notice. And they say users of Starlink need not fear because there are thousands of functioning satellites still up there that can handle the load.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never even notice the difference, Jay.
As of November of last year, there was 5,500 Starlink satellites. So decommissioning 100 is just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. What do they say? They've done already 6,500 so far?
Yeah, probably.
Well, I guess 406 have been deorbited. 6,500 have been launched.
Wow.
But that's, you know, that they're gaining real experience about
and
how to
real
do this
global
safely
coverage
and effectively
too.
And not leave debris behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the global coverage is great too, but I'm just talking about the ability to manage these things and not create, you know, a trash heap in space or a trash heap whatever or other colliding problems or anyway, they're learning about all the details on this. I think it's tremendous.
Indeed. And responsible of them and good work.
All right. Not so good work for the next people, Jay. What do they call this thing? The Ford 150 FEV? Is that what it is? Or F-150 EV? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's the Lightning, right? The Ford Lightning?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the 150 Lightning, I guess it is. It's the EV. Anyway, the problem
with
it is...
Yeah, the F-150 Lightning.
It's going horrible.
Sales not
range
good.
Range woes.
We talked about that in a previous episode a little bit.
Yeah, but it's range woes is the reason. Now, they want you to believe that people just aren't interested in them. It's not even true. People have bought them, a bunch of them, and the problem is they don't get near the range they were promised.
The problem
is, some buyers say the electric lightning did not meet expectations. And so now Ford has to slash its plans. They're making less than 10% of what they had projected to make on these things, Jay.
Well, range is always a problem, right, with electrical, because you got the big batteries, they're heavy and everything else. But you take a truck and you start pulling, you know, an RV or something like that behind it, some big load, and the range really plummets on those, unfortunately. And that's a big impact for these things. And that's what you're buying a truck for, really, anyway, right? I mean, generally.
Exactly.
Either that or just, you know, bragging rights. But most of the time, people are buying a truck to haul loads and heavy loads, and it hurts the range on them, no doubt.
Yeah, in July, there's this guy named Michael Publia. He drove home with what seemed to him like the coolest vehicle he'd ever owned. What am I talking about? A Ford F-150 Lightning electric truck, man. The most awesome thing on the planet, he thought. It was big enough to haul around his children, all their hockey gear. He'd never have to gas that sucker up, man. It would take off quickly. I mean, it's just a dream, baby. But now it's different because he's never got the range they promised, Jay, and he's got stuck in multiple places because the range looks like it's fine. You go somewhere and then it drops quickly and boom, you don't have the range you thought you did. It's like your cell phone is like, okay, I got 30% left. I'm good. Next thing you know, it's like 2% in like a second, right?
Yeah, we've all been there.
It's that kind of stuff. And so they're just returning them going, these things suck. I just can't deal with it.
Ouch.
They've overpromised and underdelivered to the point where it's literally a meltdown now, Jay.
Yeah, that's not good. And that's going to leave a bad taste in people's mouth. You know, they've got to get, especially if you're going to try to push an electric revolution, you've got to get some of the early models right. You've got to make people happy. You can't let them down like that, or it's going to hurt them in the long run. If Ford's goal and other companies are really to move their entire fleets to electric, or at least the vast majority of them. Now, I can see places like, hey, if you're up in Alaska where you, 6 months out of the year, you're not getting very much sunshine, you're it's always cold, you've got heavy loads, you're dealing with stuff, fuels are going to work better there. But if you're trying to move your whole fleet toward electric or the general populace, ruining it with some of your best, biggest, and highest touted, too. I mean, they're really bragging about this Lightning and all the features it can do. I mean, I've seen ads where it can power your whole house in a storm and, you know, can reverse charge. Somebody else's Tesla's down and you can give them some power out of yours. And so, but if it's letting people down, that's not cool. It's not going to bode well for them either. It's dropping Ford stock, too, by the way, if you're in.
Yeah, that. I can see why. And by the way, California is the best market for this kind of stuff, Jay. They claim the reason why is it's not too hot, not too cold, right. Not too humid. Okay, so, you know, now you're telling me that the place where this is flourishing is the best
in
scenario.
Ideal conditions, yeah, and it's not doing well.
Yeah, and it's not doing that great. And so my response is, what about, you know, the rest of us? So I hate to say it, Jay, but this is not going to fly for quite some time. They don't have answers for any of this stuff, really.
Yeah, well, we talked about in a previous episode about them rolling back their, a lot of companies rolling back their target. Well, we're going to be all EV by 2030. Yeah, probably not going to happen, actually.
They say consumers are just not jumping up and down for EVs, says this guy, Mark Cannon. He's an independent consultant who he was kind of the chief customer service experience officer at AutoNation. This guy's just saying, look, people aren't jumping up and down for this. It's just not working out. People love the concept, Jay. It sounds cool. The problem is it's not ready for prime time at all.
It does. I mean, I love the concept. You know, no gas, no oil, no a lot of maintenance down, less moving parts, all these things. Supposedly, also in the beginning, anyway, they pitched them as they were going to be cheaper. That never happened. But a lot of people love the concept. They love the sales pitch that they've been told. But it's not panning out in a lot of ways.
Anyway, I know we've talked about it before, so it's kind of like, well, why are you talking about it again, Sam? Because every big massive change relates to this industry. Like, for example, they're talking about the charge. They say we had to stop the charge, which often took 45 minutes or longer after waiting for a charger. Now, they say the problem is the industry is forging ahead. I don't understand this. Why would you forge ahead in those scenarios where it doesn't work? I don't understand that.
Well, the people have an agenda. They want to move this forward. The people look at them as green and that, you know, they want to move toward that. And there's a lot of reasons why there's government subsidies. There's a lot of reasons why people are charging forward on it, even though the demand is starting to wane a little bit.
Yeah, the Biden administration is expected to put new rules in next month, they say. And the proposal that he has would basically require battery-powered cars to make up, what, two-thirds of all light vehicle sales by 2032. So that's what's driving this thing.
I think that's a wrong approach.
I agree, and I think the other problem with it is that, you know, these companies, what do they do?
Well,
what are they going to do?
If you make a better product,
can't.
You don't have to force the industry to switch. You don't have to tamper with the market. You make a better product, and everybody will be on it. You just wait 7 years, and everybody will switch their vehicle out for electric if it's truly a better product. And if it's not a better product, why are we forcing consumers into a suboptimal product? I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah, they say still the industry is forging ahead with this. Analysts estimate that 1.5 million electric vehicles will be sold this year, up from almost 1.2 million in 2023. Anyway, you look at that and you go, I mean, I guess, but it's still not a huge percent. How many, you know, vehicles are sold in a given year? Way more than a million, Jay. It's like 8 million. Or I'd have to look up the recent numbers, but they're just carving out a piece of this at best. And the problem is, how many returns and how many frustrated buyers are they going to get if they keep forcing this down our throats?
Yeah, it looks like about 13.6 million per year.
Okay.
That's data from 2022.
Old number that said 8 million, yeah. Okay, so 13 million. So, you know, 1 million, even if you get that done, or 1.5 million.
Less than 10%.
10%?
Yeah, less
than
10%.
So you kind of go, why are they just forcing this? And how many of those 10% people are going to be frustrated? Like this Ford example, or like, you know, the example of the batteries. When cars catch on fire, when, you know, they're afraid to cut into cars with the jaws of life because they're afraid to cut something that might go kaboom or whatever. All I'm telling you is that this is not ready. I don't understand this forced push. And what's going to happen when the car makers can't meet this? Are they just going to be fined and then bailed out? And anyway, you look at this whole thing and you just go, I've never seen a scenario in my life economically where they absolutely go against reality so much so that it's going to create harm somehow in the middle, Jay.
Right.
Not to this degree anyway.
I think they look at it a lot like they did with fuel economy in the 70s, 80s, 90s, where they were pushing fuel economy standards, and, you know, we had to reach this certain MPG by this date. And, you know, economists and politicians like to be able to take responsibility for that stuff and by passing legislation. And that's probably a good deal of it.
Well, I'll tell you, they haven't made any progress in this, really. When I was a young man and I just got married 32 years ago, I bought a Geo Metro car.
Right.
And that thing got close to 50 miles to the gallon, really, 45, 44 consistently. You can't find cars that do that well even now, hardly, right?
Yeah, not really. I mean, the Toyota Prius, which is a hybrid, can get close to that or
yeah, but now you're
numbers.
Cheating and adding in other components, and you can say, well, they extend the life, but at what cost? So now you got to have a battery, and now you got to haul around that battery, and you got to do all these things and charge that battery, and what happens when you need to replace the battery and stuff. There's all kinds of downstream realities to that. It's not as great as it sounds.
Right.
So I don't see that they've really made a whole lot of progress when it comes to, and if we don't make progress in the battery realm fast, I just don't see how this stuff can work. I just think they need too much power, and we don't have the power. They need infrastructure. We don't have the infrastructure. And then we need to have all these problems go away of the, hey, when I look at my car and it's full of gas, I can know for sure how much travel time I've got. With this scenario, you can't even know, Jay. You can get just stuck anywhere.
Well, you're right, Tim, about batteries. Batteries are the bottleneck of an electrical revolution. And I've been waiting for years to see some major breakthrough happen in batteries. And we've had minor things, and we're constantly getting slightly better. It's almost like the way solar panels have been evolving and getting slightly better and better and better and a little bit cheaper and stuff like that. But there hasn't been any huge revolutionary giant step forward in battery technology. And I'm always hoping that it's right around the corner. But until then, it poses a serious challenge, no doubt.
And there hasn't been in not only battery technology, but there hasn't been in engine technology really either.
No, there hasn't. There's been, I actually would say there's probably been more innovation in engine technology, but again, not revolutionary. You know, people are going, there's all kinds of rotary engines and neat stuff out there and prototypes, but nothing that's sticking so far and nothing, but you have this bad
name.
Most
of the stuff being done to engines in modern day is not necessarily for technology. It's for so-called emissions or this or that,
yeah,
or whatever else changes they're doing. To where, to me, all that does is add complication and problems and complexity to an engine that has all kinds of other points of failure, et cetera, et cetera. Increased cost to build in the first place and so on. Half the time it's like, we got a problem. Well, is it the real issue of the item, or is it the sensor telling you the items, but you know what's going on? And
well,
to the point where it's almost become too complicated to even deal with vehicles at all.
There's now a stigma.
Out of control.
There's now a stigma around internal combustion engines to where even if you could make some increases in efficiency, some people just have that bad taste in their mouth, or they've just developed it from, you know, what they're hearing about from other people, that, oh, if it's an internal combustion engine, it's just not good. It doesn't matter if it got 75 miles to the gallon. That's not the solution to go forward, Sam.
Well,
in some people's
only
mind.
Solid, it's the only solid solution that has credibility and works that we can point to. You look at the past and look and say, there's no better mode of transportation, but
it does, you know, have a history.
Gas or diesel engines.
Yeah.
Nothing. Even if you say, well, what about, you know, steam engines or anything else? And hey, we've all moved to these gas and diesel-based engines for a reason. You know, propane,
right,
natural gas might be next if it's stationary items, or propane for short-distance vehicles and stuff like that, you know, forklifts or whatever. But
or
really,
hydrogen.
Gas and diesel has fueled it all, right? Period,
yeah.
End of paragraph, nothing compares that we know of to date, not even close.
Indeed, nothing compares to it.
And, you know, until they build something that compares to and exceeds, either decreases cost or increases efficiency or whatever else, I mean, I'm looking for all the gains we can get, it's going to be a frustrating non-starter. It just is. When some buyers say that it didn't meet expectations, what percent of that? So let's say we sell 1.5 million vehicles this year. How many complaints and frustrations are we going to have? How quick will these things be in the trash heap because you can't afford to replace the battery? Or, in other words, we haven't even seen the downstream effects of this yet either, Jay. They're just all
That's
too
true.
New.
A lot happening, a lot going on, and changes in the air. We'll see what happens, though, on it.
Yeah. In the next episode, though, we want to talk about chatbots a little bit more because there's a lot happening and a lot changing in that realm, too. Just so you know, Gemini is a merger between a chatbot and an assistant. You kind of wonder what that looks like as it enters the arena. We'll talk about that next episode. You know, there's a big race between OpenAI's ChatGPT and some of these other products. Different people. Now we're talking about Brave getting a new AI assistant. So there's a lot of changes. Instead of AI being just something that you can ask a question to and it will spew out an answer, conversations are becoming more dialogue oriented. The ability for the chat system to remember things that relate to you and things that you want it to remember is starting to increase. It's starting to be a tool instead of just stand on its own, play with it, built into systems for true day-to-day usability. Things are changing fast in the chat market, in the auto, whatever you want to call it, assistant or, you know, intelligent, whatever, models. There's a lot happening in this sphere. Most of the changes are kind of behind the scenes, and people don't really realize how ubiquitous it's becoming, how quick. Well, the problem is the laws haven't kept up with this either in terms of copyrights. And I mean, I can go on and on about people are suing people. And I mean, this is a very scrappy, difficult discussion about what's going to happen in the future. But we want to talk about it from a tech point of view and how to protect yourself a little bit, because it's critical. All right, this episode's in the can. Stay tuned for our AI discussion here soon. And thanks for listening. If you want to learn more, npitechguys.com or networkprovidersinc.com. Hey, make it a great tech day, will you? Thanks.